Free will is somewhat paradoxical in any case, but especially so in the case of disciples. That is why discipleship is always fraught with extreme difficulty. The disciple is called upon to make a decision, and yet he must make the correct one which stands upon the inner planes, and he must meet a time schedule. But happily a way is always provided, though it may be a way of severe struggle. In the case of Niccolo it was the way of psychic illness and was far from pleasant. He lapsed into a lethargic state from which he could scarcely be roused at times. His parents were frightened. The doctors admitted they were helpless as they had no idea what was causing the illness. When it reached a critical stage they simply gave up all hope of saving his life. Naturally the doctors in Gospic had no idea whatever about the true nature of Niccolo's illness. Even medical scientist today knows nothing of soul sickness or the diseases which attack only disciples and not the average person. The individual himself, however, is usually able to supply the answer for he is under guidance from the inner planes. So after the Gospic doctors had given up hope for his life, and his parents had become somewhat resigned, Niccolo turned to his books. He had been working in the local library at Gospic and had carried home an armful of selections just before his illness. Listlessly he looked them over. He found one by Mark Twain. In it he suddenly discovered a paragraph which brought instant illumination. His enthusiasm for life was rekindled. The crisis passed. His health returned to normal. Niccolo himself understood with profound conviction that it was the writing of Mark Twain that had saved his life. He never forgot the incident to the end of his days and often spoke of his heartfelt gratitude to Mark Twain. Many years after the Gospic incident the two men met in New York and became very close friends. When Tesla himself had only a short time left on Earth, and Mark Twain had been gone from the mortal scene for years, Tesla spoke of Mark coming to see him in his hotel room, and of their having a long visit together. When Tesla was reminded that Mark Twain had been dead for years, he vigorously denied it, adding that he was very much alive. As indeed he is, even though invisible to certain people. The very same sort of people who failed to see through the humorous philosophy of Mark Twain, and into the supernal light beyond. What did Mark and Niccolo talk about in that memorable conversation which took place on a January day in 1943 in a New York hotel room, where Tesla's physical body lay breathing lightly in almost final readiness for departure? Mark and Niccolo were old friends, companions of ancient days in starry space. Like all such gentle humorists, like all such compassionate observers of human folly, like all old friends, they met on that occasion of joyous reunion, and they talked about the weather. Standing there together in their magnificent clean bodies of vibrant light, it was only natural that their conversation should turn to that earlier sickroom scene in Gospic, when Niccolo, with the vital help of high-frequency energies pouring from Mark's written words, had firmly set his course once again into an uncertain future among foolish mortals. It was Mark who had glimpsed the mortals in a humorous moment when they had reached an ebb point in their foolishness. A point where everybody talked about the weather, but nobody did anything about it. Page 102. That vibrant instant with Mark had set Niccolo free from his illness in Gospic. Nobody did anything about the weather, Mark said. But Niccolo joyfully remembered that he had determined to do something about it years earlier when he walked through a mountain thunderstorm. He was going to learn to control lightning, and thereby control the weather. He was the somebody whose inventions would liberate and illumine all the negative nobodies of the world. Yes, that was what they talked about, the author and the inventor, on a day in January, 1943. The Gospic illness over, Niccolo was ready to be guided to his next necessary advancement. His father had been thoroughly frightened and was now anxious to humor the boy by permitting him to go to college at Kallstadt in Croatia. Upon arriving in that city Niccolo took up residence with relatives, but his years in their home were unhappy ones. Almost at once he contracted malaria but he insisted upon starting his classes at college. His brilliance undimmed by either illness or lack of family harmony, he completed the 4-year college course in 3 years. he carried away with him one lasting impression which was to make everything easier in his life thereafter. His professor of physics had held him enthralled with demonstrations of feats performed with laboratory apparatus. Tesla knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that his life was to be fully and completely dedicated to a study of electricity. With his life stretching complete before him, he returned home, only to face up to the demands of the army. Again he suddenly fell into a psychic illness. Again doctors gave up all hope of saving his life. A cholera epidemic raged in the town, and it was presumed that he had cholera in addition to malaria, plus the nervous strain brought on by his college work, plus undernourishment resulting from the unhappy culinary situation in the home of his relatives in Karlstadt. However, from the occult point of view, Nikola suffered from a psychic illness in order to prevent a greater tragedy: compulsory military service. During the long illness, which steadily became worse, Nikola's father became more frightened. The space people have not explained how much Nikola's father knew about the boy's origin. Of course, his mother had to know the details, but it is fairly clear that she herself was originally a Venusian. Perhaps the father was not, and it is even possible that Nikola was placed in the care of the mother without the father knowing of his origin. This all happened long ago in a remote mountain province. Women gave birth to children, often alone, on with only a midwife or neighbor in attendance. There are many possible explanations. At any rate, whatever his understanding about his son, the Reverend Milutin Tesla was ready to accept anything to save the life of Nicolo at a moment when the boy was drifting off into unconsciousness from which it seemed apparent he would not emerge. His father, in a firm, clear voice, commanded him not to die. In exchange, Nikola used his few remaining breaths to gasp out the news that he would remain if his father would let him become an electrical engineer. The bargain was struck on the instant, and within a matter of seconds vital energy began pouring through the tired body. In a few days Nikola was up and about and life was glorious once more. The shadow of death had hovered close and then withdrawn. The shadow of the army loomed directly ahead. But Nicola's father had given his promise. Nikola was to be an electrical engineer and the army was to be minus one recruit. It was then that Nicola's father realized that his son needed at least a year's vacation in the mountains in order to regain not only his health but his freedom. Hurriedly Nikola was provided with a hunting outfit, some books and papers. He was gone before anyone in Gospic knew he had risen from his deathbed. In 1873 Nikola went to Graz to study electrical engineering. He knew that the forces of destiny were shaping him for a great purpose, and during his first year at Graz he did more than twice the amount of work required, passing all examinations with the highest marks that could be awarded. He hoped in this way to express his appreciation to his parents for saving him from army service and for permitting him to study electrical engineering. But because they feared he was again undermining his health, they did not receive the news of his high marks with joy. During the second year he limited his studies to physics, mathematics and mechanics in order to placate his parents. Actually, however, he was guided in this decision by higher forces, for it was important that he have plenty of leisure time to devote to the next step in his unfoldment. A piece of electrical equipment, a grand machine that could be used as either a dynamo or motor, had been acquired by the Institute. It was a direct current machine, and was demonstrated to the class. It did not please Tesla because a great deal of sparking took place at the commutator. The professor explained that as long as electricity flowed in one direction, a commutator would be necessary to change the direction, and the sparking could, therefore, not be avoided. Tesla replied that by using alternating currents the commutator could be eliminated. The professor was waiting for this suggestion and let loose a storm of criticism. He informed Tesla, in an abrupt and lofty professorial manner, that many men had already experimented with alternating current, and it was simply not feasible. In that instant Tesla had an intuitive flash. He knew the professor was wrong. He knew alternating current was possible. He knew that he would and could demonstrate it. The argument between the student and teacher went on during the remainder of the term, And although Tesla was unable to bring his vision down to practical results, he was by no means discouraged. The professor stated that Tesla's theories were contradicted by nature and that settled the matter. It was far from settled in Tesla's mind. The following year Tesla was to go to the University of Prague, but a lucrative position was offered him, so he saved his earnings, and enrolled at the university a year later. He extended his studies in physics and mathematics, but the vision of alternating current remained ever before him. In his heart he knew that he would make the great discovery that would elevate the infant science of electricity to the maturity of a great power. Just after his graduation from the University of Prague his father died, and then Tesla set about to become self-supporting. The telephone invented by Alexander Graham Bell was making its advent in Europe at this time, and in 1881 he was placed in charge of the new telephone exchange in Budapest. While there he developed an amplifier, which led to the present amplifiers on radio sets, he never patented the DA-106 device. However, as his sole interest was still the problem of alternating current. At this time, he underwent another severe psychic illness, during which his sense organs were affected by acute sensitivity. Apparently his vibrations were raised for some occult reason, and although doctors despaired of saving his life, he came through the period of suffering and his vibrations were restored to normal. But during the illness his dedication to the problem of alternating current had fully crystallized. He could scarcely think of anything else, and he knew that if he stopped working on it he would die, if he failed he would likewise perish. He was a man without a choice, and on a late afternoon in February, 1882, he had recovered sufficiently to take a walk in a park in Budapest. His companion was a former classmate by the name of Szigeti. The two young men walked toward the setting sun. The skies ahead were painted with colors of high brilliance. Tesla was reciting aloud Goethe's Faust. It was a cosmic moment and Tesla was at one with the angels. Suddenly he stopped in a rigid pose. "Watch me," he cried out. "Watch me reverse it." His startled companion was thrown into a state of panic, for Tesla seemed to be gazing at the sunset, and Szigeti feared that Tesla, though he could reverse the sun. Szigeti suggested that they rest a moment, but Tesla talked on excitedly, looking steadily at something directly in front of him. Szigeti could see nothing, but Tesla was calling out in an exultant voice, "See how smoothly it runs. Now watch me stop it. Then start it. It goes just as smoothly in the opposite direction." Eventually Tesla became somewhat more composed and explained to his companion that he had just solved the problem of alternating current. He also revealed to Szigeti that he could see the motor before him, in full operation, and that he would not need to make drawings. But for the benefit of his friend who could see nothing but clear air in the spot where Tesla was operating his motor, they returned home together and talked far into the hours of the night, discussing every detail of the discovery. Shortly thereafter Tesla was recommended for a job in Paris, and he was pleased to go to that city because it meant many contacts with Americans who were interested in all sorts of mechanical developments. Meanwhile he had mentally built a complete alternating current system, both two-phase and three or more. His famous polyphase power system was a reality. As usual, he designed his dynamos, motors, transformers and all other devices in the fourth ether, performing his mathematical calculations on the etheric blackboard just as in his school days. He could test these mental constructs by leaving the machines in the ether to run for weeks. He would then examine them for signs of wear. When he arrived in Paris he formulated a certain living pattern to which he adhered for the rest of his life, insofar as possible, or insofar as money would permit. He was always meticulously neat in dress, full of self-confidence, and carried himself with a poised, quiet attitude. For many years he had never rested more than 5 hours at night, and he claimed that he never slept more than 2 hours out of the five. In Paris he would rise at 5, swim to the Seine for half an hour, then dress and walk briskly for more than an hour to his place of work. He then ate a hearty breakfast, and by 8:30 he was ready for his duties. In the evening he would return to the center of Paris, dine at the best cafes, and contact any companions who were willing to listen to him describe his polyphase alternating current system. At this point, Tesla demonstrated that he was a world disciple, pledged to serve humanity and not a privileged group, for he never developed a secretive attitude about his inventions. He would gladly talk to anyone who would listen. He wanted only one thing: to give his invention to the human race so that all might benefit from it. He knew there was a fortune in it, but he was never concerned about the process of extracting fortunes from his machines. He did not understand anything about money making. This was due to the fact that he was a Venusian, and had not had any previous training in handling money. Money as we know it does not exist on Venus or anywhere in this solar system. The solar system operates on a basis of spiritual economy in which God's unlimited abundance and supply is accepted as divine law. A man-made money system such as exists on this planet is a direct contradiction of that law. Further, the money system was created here as an instrument to serve the forces of darkness and has been used for the enslavement of humanity. Paul knew exactly what he was talking about when he stated that love of money was the root of all evil. Tesla may have known nothing about money making in the commercial shopping sense, but he had a deep understanding of the evils of the money system on this planet. In fact, his understanding in this regard was so profound that he never made the slightest attempt to come to terms with banking interests, because he realized that in doing so he would be coming to terms with the dark forces themselves. However, he was not going to take time out from his work to attempt to explain his attitude to anyone, so he just went ahead with his job of serving humanity and the forces of light, and left others to serve the devil if they wished. Tesla was not a reformer. He was a transformer. His job was to transform the world from darkness to light, from enslavement to freedom. Tesla made every effort to break down any secrecy surrounding his inventions. He was ready and willing to explain to all who would listen. There was no danger of his inventions being stolen at that time. In fact, he could not even give them away. The forces of darkness were already securely entrenched in the electrical field. They wanted no part of any invention designed by a white magician. Well, they knew that if Tesla ever invaded the electrical field in global fashion, it would mark the end of the old way of life with all its international complexities, its churchianity, its educational inadequacies. There remained nearly 20 years until the turn of the century, and yet Tesla stood as the great colossus, the mighty genius who, working hand in hand with his creator, might have saved the world from further violence of clashing forces of evil. Years later, when alternating current was finally adopted in America through the good offices of George Westinghouse, the dark forces still fought to turn the tide against Tesla. Finally, they capitulated and took the opposite stand. They supported the adoption of alternating current and its widespread use, but only when they found that Tesla had outwitted them by obsoleting his own invention. He abandoned the whole system set up around the distribution of electricity by wires and developed a world wireless system whereby everyone could have all the electricity they wished by merely attaching a small antenna to home, shop or office building. Page 110. The forces of darkness would have none of this, and to this day, in 1958, they have been successful in preventing the wireless system from reaching the attention of the public, which would demand its use. But now Tesla, working in the scientific department of Shambhala, has again had the last word to say through his disciple, Otis T. Carr of Baltimore. As the new age advances, it is quite likely that Tesla's wireless system for electrical distribution may be obsoleted by Carr's free energy devices. And so it is that the legions of light move steadily on to victory. As the new civilization takes shape, it will be clearly seen that Tesla had access to no secrets at any time. He had direct contact with the universal truth. Tesla worked out ways and means to anchor truth on the physical plane through using physical matter. The early root races on the planet worked in exactly the same manner. They brought down and anchored in physical matter the higher vibrations direct from the Godhead. Matter is spirit slowed down, spirit is matter speeded up. All is one. The anchoring of truth, or the lowering of vibrations, has never been a secret process. It has always been part of the teaching of the ageless wisdom. But it is a well-known fact that you can't get truth out of a man if he has no available truth in him. Truth is light. Light which is imprisoned or obscured cannot illumine a person. Only the individual with a clean atomic structure, or one who understands and practices transmutation, can hope to anchor truth in physical matter. The average scientists, especially those contaminated by working with military weapons, are in no position to embark on a search for truth. It will not be found in an H-bomb. When Tesla agreed to undertake the task of bringing light to the Earth, he envisioned this globe as one vast terrestrial lamp spiraling through the skies toward its God-ordained destiny of perfected evolution, bearing upon its lighted body a race of illumined initiates, freed from the cycle of rebirth, journeying back to their source, to their appointed mansion in the Father's house. This was Tesla's great secret, if secret he had. Let those who feel overlooked because they were not called upon to share it, ask themselves at this point if they are sure they are quite ready, even now, to share it. Or are they like those disciples of Jesus who had to listen to the Master tell them they were not ready to share the knowledge of certain things, that to speak of such truths would place upon them a greater burden of light than they could bear? Tesla's life in Paris went on smoothly. He enjoyed robust health. But he was employed by the Continental Edison Company, working all day on direct current machines, and this proved to be an irksome point. His superior alternating current inventions, although still in the fourth ether, were tauntingly close at hand. Finally, the situation was changed abruptly by an accident in the railway station at Strasbourg in Alsace, where an Edison powerhouse and electric lights had been installed. Alsace then belonged to Germany, and the electrical installation was formally opened with Emperor William I present. Unfortunately, when the lights were turned on, the glory was indeed brief, for a short circuit caused an entire wall of the railway station to be blown to bits. Tesla was sent from Paris to Strasbourg to survey the damage and proceed with repairs. Once the work got underway and he could serve in a supervisory capacity, he arranged for space and tools in a nearby machine shop, and there he proceeded to transfer his dream of alternating current from the fourth ether to the physical plane. He was an amateur machinist but a meticulous worker, and gradually a large collection of miscellaneous parts of a two-phase alternating current motor took shape in the machine shop. Tesla not only made each part exact to a thousandth of an inch, but he carefully polished it to make it more exact. He had no working drawings or blueprints. He formed each part from metal to exactly match the etheric part which he saw before him. He did not have to test the parts because he knew they would fit. When he had finished the entire collection, he quickly assembled the machine and started up his power generator. The cosmic moment had struck. He closed the switch. The armature of his motor turned, built up speed. He closed the reversing switch. The armature stood still, then instantly started turning in the opposite direction. Alternating current had been transferred from the invisible to the visible, from the fourth ether to the dense physical plane, from a substance lighter than gas to metal. So there in the noisy machine shop in Strasbourg stood the very motor which Tesla had first discovered in the sunset glow in the park at Budapest, walking with his friend, Szigeti. Even the beautiful lines from Goethe's Faust, which he had been proclaiming aloud as he walked, were still appropriate. The glow retreats, done is the day of toil, it yonder hastes, new fields of life exploring, ah, that no wing can lift me from the soil, upon its track to follow, follow soaring. Page 113. Tesla's unique method of constructing his first motor gives an excellent clue to the manner in which all initiates consciously work, although they usually precipitate the etheric form instantly into physical matter, without intermediary construction work. They can externalize whatever they need by first visualizing it in the ethers, then calling it forth into physical density. That is why spaceships are described as being constructed without rivets, welding, seams, or cracks around doors. They are not constructed but precipitated direct from the ether. Since the laggards came and human beings forgot how to precipitate what they need, All man-made forms are first created in mental matter by a designer thinking through his problem and creating a thought form. Mental matter is on the same plane as gas, and is, therefore, one density lower than the fourth ether. But mental matter is all that the average person can manipulate, and is not by any means pure but is heavily weighted with astral accumulations. It is virtually impossible for the average person to create a clear, precise thought form, free from personal emotional distortions. Since he cannot control his mental constructs with any degree of success, his matrix or thought form is often composed more of fantasy than of fact. When it is lowered into form, the physical plane result is often useless, ugly, and a spiritual monstrosity. In the summer of 1884, shortly after Tesla returned from Strasbourg to Paris, he arrived in New York City with exactly 4 cents in his pocket, and a book of his poems. In addition, he had a letter of introduction to Thomas A. Edison. In a few brief weeks in Europe, many things had happened to force this hurried and unplanned voyage to America. While Tesla was still in Strasbourg, he tried to interest businessmen there in his new alternating current motor, which he had built from the parts he had made by hand. He could not stir up a spark of enthusiasm for the machine which was later to revolutionize the electrical industry of the world. Then, when he returned to Paris to collect the substantial fee which he had been promised for getting the Strasbourg installation in operation, the company conveniently failed to remember anything about the arrangement. One official, however, did suggest to Tesla that he go direct to Mr. Edison in America. Within a few days, Tesla sold his personal belongings, packed his bags, and brought his railroad and steamship tickets. However, just as he was about to board the train to take him from Paris to the ship, he discovered he had been robbed. He ran along the moving train and boarded it, paying his fare with loose change and notes he had in his pockets after his wallet was stolen. He also boarded the ship, explaining that his ticket had been stolen. Fortunately, no one showed up to claim his reservations, so he was allowed to continue on his way to the United States. Without luggage and with only a few cents in change, he finally landed in New York. He lacked fare for either cab or trolley, so he set out to walk from the pier to the home of a friend, for he had fortunately retained his address book. He walked past an electrical repair shop, and inside he saw a weary and obviously harassed workman struggling to repair a machine. He entered the shop. "Let me repair it," he said to the mechanic. The workman, without further inquiry, permitted Tesla to set to work. Although the task was difficult, Tesla finally had the machine operating. The grateful mechanic handed him $20 and offered him a steady job. But Tesla thanked him, explaining that he was on his way to another job, and could not accept his offer. He continued on his way, found his friend, and remained at his home overnight. The next morning he set out to call on Mr. Edison, who then had headquarters in New York on South Fifth Avenue, a street which later became known as West Broadway. The meeting between the two men was not auspicious. Edison belonged to the direct current school of thought, and Tesla was not only in opposition to direct current, but was actually the inventor of alternating current. Furthermore, Edison was lacking in technical education. He was totally unable to understand Tesla's ability to visualize a problem in its entirety without doing any mechanical work on it or following the usual trial and error method. Yet Edison was conscious of Tesla's great value, and while he could not afford to hire him as a competitor of the direct current method, yet he could not afford to let it be known that he had not hired him. Rather grudgingly he employed Tesla, and almost at once Edison was placed in a position from which only the incomparable Tesla could rescue him. The finest passenger ship of the day was called the Oregon. Edison had installed one of the electric light plants on the steamship, and the vessel was ready to set sail. However, the lighting plant failed completely, and Edison was unable to find the cause of the difficulty. Tesla was dispatched to the ship late one afternoon, and by the following morning had the dynamos functioning perfectly. This incident served to advance his prestige with Edison. When he later approached Edison with a plan to improve the design of the Edison dynamos and at the same time lower their operating cost, Edison not only agreed but offered Tesla a fee of $50,000 if the work came up to expectations. Tesla labored at the task for many months, putting in many hours of overtime daily. He completed designs for 24 types of dynamos. Some of the machines were built and tested and proved to be very satisfactory.